Within the Mammoth Cave system in Kentucky, there are incredible stories of men who have dared to explore the unknown and make historic discoveries. But there are also ghoulish stories. Figures roaming the cave system in the mid-19th century as part of a medical experiment. And the wars fought in the cave country of Kentucky. Battles fought with deception, sabotage, and a drive for success that led to a single casualty. This is the story of the legendary Mammoth Cave. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight, and I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine, all right.
Welcome to Southern Mysteries. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. Mammoth Cave in the Kentucky woods has drawn countless tourists to venture from above ground down into its mysterious chambers and explore the world's longest cave. Located in west central Kentucky near Bowling Green, in an area that's only a few miles in diameter, Mammoth Cave is more than 350 miles long and 379 feet deep, the longest cave system in the world. Much of the cave system has yet to be explored, but its history is as vast as the bottomless pit within the cave. From indigenous people to modern-day tourists, Mammoth Cave's history is rich, twisted, and fascinating. Having served as a ceremony hall, a church, a saltpeter mine, and for a brief time in the 19th century, as a hospital. The cave system also served as ground zero for an underground war that wasn't fought with weapons, the Kentucky Cave Wars. Indigenous peoples lived and hunted in the area we now know as Kentucky between 2,000 and 4,000 years ago. They traveled miles within Mammoth Cave using cane plants as torches in order to collect gypsum and other minerals that were used for medicinal and ceremonial purposes. The indigenous people continued to explore the darkness here for over 2,000 years until they abruptly stopped. No one knows why they abandoned exploring the cave system. There was less and less exploration of the caves until 1797, when a hunter discovered the cave while he was chasing a bear. Explorers found that Mammoth Cave contained saltpeter that's used in making gunpowder, a rich resource to have on hand. During the War of 1812, a saltpeter factory was established at Mammoth Cave by Hyman Gratz and Charles Wilkins. By 1838, the cave came to be appreciated for all of its resources, and people realized there was money to be made from this cave. Franklin Gorin had become the owner of Mammoth Cave and realized that people wanted to explore, and not everyone had the supplies and skills needed to do so. Gorin launched a guide service that was led by an enslaved man, 17-year-old Stephen Bishop. Stephen Bishop would eventually achieve worldwide fame for his discoveries and knowledge of Mammoth Cave. He loved exploring the cave, and when he wasn't leading tours, he was constantly exploring and discovering. Bishop was curious and brave and was able to do what no other man had done before, cross what's now known as the bottomless pit of Mammoth Cave, a massive hole of darkness. Bishop knew there was more to see than he was seeing on the tours he was conducting. He knew he could see more if he was exploring on his own. The farthest anyone had been in the cave was to the bottomless pit, never beyond. Bishop and a guest who came to Mammoth Cave for a tour decided it was time to pass the great barrier of the bottomless pit and find what was beyond that darkness. The men made their way through the cave, and when they arrived at the pit, they used an old ladder and laid it over the mouth of the pit. Cautiously and with a level of confidence no one had been able to muster before, the men crossed the bottomless pit. What they found that day opened up a whole new world, a whole new part of the cave, a river. This was the first body of water that had ever been encountered in the cave system. Some of the most popular areas of the cave were both discovered and named by Bishop after he crossed the bottomless pit. The most notable are Fat Man's Misery, Cleveland Avenue, and Mammoth Dome. Stephen Bishop was freed in early 1856, but he was never able to carry out his life dream of buying his freedom and that of his wife and son. On June 15th of 1856, Stephen Bishop died at the age of 36. Stephen Bishop left behind an incredible legacy. He's credited with beginning the tradition of excellence among cave guides of Mammoth Cave and creating a standard that exists to this day. In 1839, a new owner took control of Mammoth Cave, Dr. John Croghan. The doctor promoted the cave as one of the great wonders of the world, believing that the air in the cave held curative properties. So he purchased Mammoth Cave for $10,000 and began to put his plans into action to promote and grow tourism at Mammoth Cave. He built roads, improved buildings, and constructed a large hotel to lodge tourists. And Dr. Croghan built something that had never been built in the United States before 1842, the nation's first tuberculosis hospital, and it was built inside Mammoth Cave. For years, the doctor had heard from visitors that they felt better after being exposed to the cave's unique environment. Some believe the cave's constant humidity and steady temperature was a combination that led to health. Many mentioned that they or someone they loved suffered from consumption. Consumption had been a mystery to many, often known to people at that time as a disease of those with broken hearts. In 1839, a German physician studied consumptives and was able to learn more about tubercles, small nodular lesions in the lungs or other tissues, which is a characteristic of what he called tuberculosis, an infectious disease that generally affects the lungs and can cause fever, chills, night sweats, fatigue, and severe coughing fits. There was no known cure, no clear diagnosis for patients at this time. But Dr. Croghan, who suffered from tuberculosis, was convinced he felt better when he spent time underground at Mammoth Cave. That belief led him to open the Tuberculosis Hospital at Mammoth. Within 3 years of opening his experimental hospital in 1842, Dr. Croghan welcomed 11 volunteer patients, along with four of their companions and the child of an invalid. The patients lived in wooden cottages that were constructed a mile and a half inside the entrance to Mammoth Cave. At the time, cool air was considered healthy for tuberculosis patients. Dr. Croghan instructed the patients to embrace the cave's steady 60 degrees Fahrenheit feel. Yes, the cave was a little damp, but the doctor told his patients that the damp, cool air would be fine for the lungs, manifestly imparting strength. Along with the cool, damp air in the cave, there was also darkness and a period of adjustment for the patients. During the day, the cave was lit by fat lamps, and at night they had candles. It took time to adjust to a lack of natural light, but after a while, they got used to it, and it said the darkness didn't bother them for a time. Food was delivered to them, and to pass the time, the patients explored the cave, connected with each other by talking and reading books. On Sundays, the colony, as they had come to be known, gathered for a small church service. It's important to note that Mammoth Cave was still a tourist attraction, which means that when a tourist would visit the cave in 1842, they would encounter a rather odd scene. They would see pale men and women in dressing gowns slowly moving along the passageway inside the cave. They would hear the echo of coughing fits coming from small cottages where the colony lived. This had become the norm for patients living underground, but for tourists exploring Mammoth Cave, it must have seemed bizarre. The patients didn't care what the tourists thought. Early on, they claimed to be improving, and Dr. Croghan started making plans to expand the hospital. But as the days passed, it seemed the improvement with the patients wasn't as profound as they had believed. They seemed happy early on, which was believed to be the result of camaraderie with fellow patients who understood their illness and were part of this experiment. It seemed hope may have helped lift their spirits. Within months, the smoke from the fires lit underground to cook for the patients, and the smoke from the oil lanterns made their conditions worse, caused further damage to their already weakened lungs. Weak patients became even more fatigued. Isolation from the outside world began to take a toll on them. Some of the patients asked Dr. Croghan if they could return to the surface, but he insisted that for the sake of their health, they needed to remain in Mammoth Cave. Only one patient left early on. His name was Oliver H.P. Anderson. When he was asked about why he resurfaced, Anderson said this, "I left the cave yesterday under the impression that I would be better out than in, as my lungs were completely irritated with smoke and my nose offended by a disagreeable smell, the consequence of a lack of ventilation." And it was after Anderson left the cave that the hope of the cave cure began to fade, with the condition of the patients declining. A cave guide who delivered food and supplies to the patients in the tuberculosis hospital was asked to describe the underground patients. He said the cave dwellers looked more like a company of skeletons than anything else. And in time, five of the patients who had entered the hospital in the cave had died. Dr. Croghan had to face the reality that his experiment must end. The surviving patients returned to the surface, and witnesses who saw them resurface noted their eyes were perfectly black, no matter what their original color had been, a reference to how much the patient's pupils dilated during the 5 months they had been in the cave. Those who survived the experience were not above ground for long. All of them died not long after leaving the cave hospital. Dr. Croghan never published the outcomes of his deadly experiment. In fact, he never admitted failure and never made public comments about the women and men who had died having sought his cave cure. Dr. Croghan would continue his own struggle against tuberculosis for 6 years after the hospital experiment ended. He died in 1849. The doctor's will granted ownership of Mammoth Cave to the Croghan heirs, as they were known, his seven nephews and nieces, held the cave in trust and were part of a larger battle for tourists and money in the area, a battle that came to be known as the Kentucky Cave Wars. In the years following the doctor's failed experiment, increased transportation modes led to a tourism boom at Mammoth Cave. In 1906, the cave became accessible by steamboat when a lock and dam was constructed at Brownsville, Kentucky. In 1909, a talented young mining engineer arrived from Germany. His name was Max Camper. He spent several months surveying Mammoth and was able to produce an accurate instrumental survey of many kilometers of the cave. It would take decades, not until the early 1960s, for modern explorers to survey and map these passages with greater accuracy than Camper had in the early 20th century. Camper was able to make a few new discoveries and was said to have also produced a corresponding survey of the land surface overlying the cave. This was very important information because that survey could be useful if someone wanted to open other entrances to Mammoth Cave. He gave the information to the Croghan family, but they suppressed the topographic element of Camper's map, and it's assumed to have been lost or destroyed. A convenient loss, because by not sharing that information, they could continue to operate parts of the cave that may not have been owned by their family. The success of Mammoth Cave as a tourist attraction led others in the area to wonder if the Croghan family's business was a model for others. Farming in the area was difficult. There was poor soil in the cave country, so locals began to buy smaller caves. They knew that anyone set on visiting Mammoth Cave had to not only drive through the Mammoth Cave region, but also the Flint Ridge Cave region to get to Mammoth. As more and more tourists visited Kentucky Cave Country, more money was at stake for the owners of the caves in the area. The desire to compete led up-and-coming competitors to blast open new entrances to Mammoth Cave. In the early 1920s, a man named George Morrison did just that, opening entrances on land that wasn't owned by the Croghan estate. Seeing as how the Croghans kept the Camper surveys as a secret, there was no way to prove the extent of the cave they owned. In fact, those who owned land around Mammoth Cave believed the Croghans had been exhibiting portions of Mammoth Cave that were not owned by their family. This led to lawsuits and an all-out war to operate entrances to the cave and bring tourists in for different owners. The Kentucky Cave Wars were fought with deception and sabotage. The enemies, the Mammoth Cave Estate, against everyone else who owned a cave in Mammoth Cave Ridge and Flint Ridge. By now, competition was fierce, with Mammoth Cave going up against owners of Colossal Cave, Long Cave, Shorts Cave, Great Onyx Cave, Indian Cave, Salts Cave, and Crystal Cave. All kinds of tactics were used to deceive motorists who were traveling through the cave region. Most had intended to visit Mammoth Cave, but not all of them ended up at their intended location. Motorists were lured away from the cave they were planning to visit on their journey by road solicitors, or cappers. Each cave had their own cappers who would work hard to bring in tourists for the cave that was paying them to wage their war of deceit. The cappers would direct motorists to their cave in several ways. They would sabotage signs that were along the roads leading to Mammoth Cave and other caves in the region. And in turn, they would point the signs in the direction of the cave they were pledging allegiance to. They would also post signs saying Mammoth Cave was flooded or closed to tourists. Cappers even worked to fool motorists by pretending they were the police and diverting traffic to a competing cave and away from Mammoth Cave or other enemy cave sites. There was no checking a website or social media to see if you were being told the truth. Signs, advertising, and the word of the locals was believable at this time. There was a level of trust that just doesn't exist today. And that trust was exploited time and time again in the seemingly never-ending efforts to win the cave wars. The obsession with opening up new entrances, discovering new caves, and hoping to earn money from the tourism boom led one man to attempt to explore a new cave, and he paid the ultimate price for his dream. Floyd Collins was a highly experienced cave diver who had been on countless adventures underground before a fatal exploration in 1925. Collins and his family operated the beautiful Crystal Cave that Collins had discovered in 1917. But Crystal Cave wasn't easy to access and didn't offer lodging for tourists. That led tourists to pass over Crystal Cave and head on to the larger, more tourist-friendly Mammoth Cave. In 1925, the Kentucky Cave Wars were still waging, and Floyd Collins knew he needed to find another entrance to the Mammoth Cave or an unknown cave along the road to Mammoth in order to draw more tourists and make more money. Floyd knew of a small cave called Sand Cave. It was in a good location along the road before many of the other caves. Floyd knew that Sand Cave hadn't been explored much, so he decided to focus his efforts at this location. The cave owner, B. Doyle, agreed to share half of the profits if Floyd found a new entrance that could turn Sand Cave into a show cave for tourists. Within 3 weeks, Floyd had explored and expanded a hole, and on January 30th of 1925, 37-year-old Floyd Collins decided to descend into Sand Cave. He was hoping to win a battle in the Kentucky Cave Wars, but Floyd Collins ended up in a battle to save his own life. Floyd Collins was alone when he squeezed and squirmed into Sand Cave on that cold January day. He entered the cave with a kerosene lamp, and before long, Floyd discovered that the cave had its challenges. He had to squeeze through tight passageways, and at times he had to inch his way through a passageway on his stomach. Slowly and meticulously, with one arm stretched ahead of him, he would push his lantern ahead of him as he inched through the passage. Patience seemed to offer hope for Floyd Collins. He noticed that the cave was beginning to open up, with the passageways becoming easier to move through. But Floyd's lantern began to flicker, and he knew how dangerous it was to be in a cave with no light. Floyd Collins made the decision to turn back and resurface to get more supplies. As he began his journey back to the surface, Floyd put his left foot in a crevice, and with his right foot, he was trying to push himself through a sharp elbow turn. When he made that move, Floyd Collins' foot dislodged a 27-pound limestone rock that wedged his ankle in a very awkward position. He wasn't able to remove it. Within the next few hours, debris would fall on top of Floyd Collins and pin his arms. Floyd Collins was trapped in what would later be described as a stone straitjacket. Floyd Collins had made his descent alone, and it took time for the farmer who owned the property to notice Floyd's jacket near Sand Cave. And he noticed Floyd wasn't around. When family and friends realized what must have happened, they desperately tried to get to Floyd, but they were unable to help. Miners from other parts of Kentucky, along with miners and cave explorers from Ohio and Indiana, came to Sand Cave to try to help rescue Floyd Collins. A 20-year-old reporter from the Louisville Courier-Journal, William Burke Miller, was sent to Sand Cave to report on the story of Floyd. Miller ended up staying throughout the entire ordeal. Nicknamed Skeets because he was 5'4", weighed 110 pounds, and could descend into the cave to talk to Floyd, Miller was able to communicate efforts, hear from Floyd, even interview him while he was trapped underground. Skeets Miller made 6 trips into the cave, and each time reassured Floyd that they were doing all they could to rescue him. But on the 5th day of the rescue, a cave-in occurred and created an even greater divide between Collins and his hopeful rescuers. The governor of Kentucky was so concerned about the rescue, he decided to call in the National Guard. Their orders were to drill a rescue shaft, all by hand, to prevent disturbing Floyd's precarious position. Over 50 guardsmen set up tents and went to work to try to organize and plan the rescue of Floyd Collins. Engineers and specialists decided to sink a rescue shaft into the ground to try to drive the shaft to get to where Floyd Collins was trapped, 55 feet down. But the ground was wet and cold, and there were too many obstacles, preventing them from reaching Floyd Collins. From early on, the media had been on the story of Floyd Collins and the rescue efforts. The story made national news thanks to a new medium called radio. And the media was obsessed with covering the story because Floyd Collins had become a national hero. The story of Floyd Collins would become the 3rd largest news event in American history between World War I and World War II, third only to Charles Lindbergh's flight and the kidnapping of Charles Lindbergh's son. In a poignant twist of fate, the then unknown aviator, Charles Lindbergh, flew out press reports and pictures that were used by news outlets reporting on the plight of Floyd Collins. In the midst of the fast-paced social, economic, and cultural changes of the 1920s, America was intrigued by Floyd Collins, a simple, humble man in Kentucky, going about his business, just trying to make a better life for himself. Americans even wanted to travel to the location where Floyd was trapped. Days into the rescue efforts, on February the 8th of 1925, there was a 4-mile-long traffic jam outside of Sand Cave. Travelers had to be kept away by barbed wire. This resulted into a waiting area that turned into a sort of carnival atmosphere. People sold hamburgers, balloons, and cave country artifacts to tourists. All the while, Floyd Collins was trapped and dying under the ground they were standing on. As Americans waited for news, rescuers kept running into obstacles in their efforts to save Floyd Collins. And there was constant tension between locals who felt the best way to get Floyd out was to keep working at the entrance Floyd had gone into on the day he was trapped, that only locals who knew the cave country could understand how to help Floyd Collins. Outsiders wanted to use big machinery to try to rescue Floyd. All the while, locals told them it wouldn't work and it would lead to cave-ins. Sadly, the locals and the outsiders who had volunteered to come in to help were unable to agree on anything. Miners and engineers pressed on with their attempts to reach Floyd Collins with the rescue shaft. 17 days after Floyd Collins was trapped underground, rescuers were able to reach him, but Floyd Collins was dead. The miners desperately wanted to bring Floyd Collins above ground for Christian burial, but they weren't able to free his body. They left him in place and filled the shaft with debris. A funeral was held above ground for Floyd Collins, his family and friends, and some of those who traveled to Kentucky to try to rescue him mourned Floyd Collins, who had suffered in that tight underground passage for over 2 weeks. Floyd Collins was a strong 37-year-old man in excellent physical shape when he descended into Sand Cave. And as he told reporter Skeets Miller, when Miller was able to descend into the cave and communicate with him, this wasn't the first time he had been trapped in a cave. Floyd had been trapped and escaped from caves before. He was a cave explorer, and this was part of the adventure and the challenge of his lifelong passion. Floyd had faith in his own ability and a lot of faith in the people above ground who were trying to help him. From the day Floyd was trapped in Sand Cave until the day his body was found, 17 days passed. Until the fifth day, Floyd had been supplied with water and crackers when Skeets Miller and others were able to squeeze into the passageway and deliver supplies to him. But after a cave-in on the fifth day, Floyd had no food or water. He was shut off from any human contact. It was later learned that Floyd Collins survived in this environment longer than the average person would have. It's estimated that Floyd Collins died on the 15th day. 3 months after Sand Cave had been closed and Floyd Collins was left underground, his brother, Homer, led efforts to hire 6 professional miners. They dug a new tunnel to the opposite side of the cave passage and recovered Floyd Collins' remains on April the 23rd of 1925. Due to the underground environment of the cave, Floyd Collins' body had been mummified. The next day, Floyd's family gave him that Christian burial they wanted to offer him in their family plot on the Collins family farm near his beloved Crystal Cave. But this would not be the final resting place of Floyd Collins. The Kentucky Cave Wars began to settle down when the last of the Croghan family heirs of Mammoth Cave had died. Around this time, there was a campaign in motion by prominent and wealthy citizens of Kentucky to establish Mammoth Cave as a national park. The park was authorized on May the 25th of 1926. All the while, Floyd Collins had become an American legend and the only casualty of the Kentucky Cave Wars. After his death, people began to exploit Floyd Collins. A country song called "The Death of Floyd Collins" was the most popular song of this time period. His face was fair and handsome, his heart was true and brave, his body now lies sleeping in a lonely sandstone cave. By 1927, Floyd Collins' family were heartbroken and in need of money. Floyd's father, Lee, made the decision to sell the farm and the cave. Unbeknownst to the Collins family, the new owner had a plan for Floyd Collins. The owner exhumed Floyd's body and created a ghoulish display. He put Floyd Collins' body in a glass-lid coffin and put the coffin on display in the entrance to Sand Cave. Hundreds of tourists came to see the decaying corpse of the cave explorer. On March 18th of 1929, Floyd Collins' body was stolen from Sand Cave. And as if this couldn't get worse, when authorities recovered Floyd Collins' body in a nearby field, they found that his left leg was missing. The owner of Crystal Cave returned Floyd Collins' body to the cave, but kept it in a more secluded section and chained the casket down. For decades, Floyd Collins' family had objected to his body being displayed in that cave. The National Park Service finally honored the family's request to rebury Floyd in 1989. Floyd Collins died once, but he was buried 4 times.
Young people, oh, take warning, this is for you and I. We may not be like Collins, but you and I must die. May not be in a sand cave in which we find our tomb, but at the mighty judgment, we too must meet our doom.
Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. You can visit Mammoth Cave National Park in Kentucky and take one of many tours within this fascinating cave system. There's a tour dedicated to Floyd Collins, and you can see significant sites important to his life and his death. You can also take a tour of what's called the Violet City. The Lantern Tour takes you through the historic area where stone huts from the tuberculosis hospital still stand. And if you'd like to learn more about the incredible life and explorations of Stephen Bishop, read Roger Brucker's Grand, Gloomy, and Peculiar, Stephen Bishop at Mammoth Cave. You can find links to the book and tours at Mammoth Cave in the show notes for this episode at southernmysteries.com. Now, if you enjoyed the episode, please share with your friends on social media and make sure you subscribe, rate, and review Southern Mysteries if you're liking what you are hearing. Thanks so much for listening.
Careful what we got to buy. There might be